IT businesses in Sacramento, California.
From somewhere deep in the cloud and the corners of the earth, this is the Killing It Podcast, with a focus on helping you make sense and dollars of all things IT, with your hosts, Dave Sobel, Ryan Morris, and Carl Polachuk.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 55 of the Killing It,
Killing It Podcast.
So we've all upgraded our hardware in the last week because we have nothing else to do.
well, plus we're all finally seeing the small deficiencies in our work from home setups, admittedly, because we're all using them continually. So right. There's always tweaks and configurations that are being done.
And as anybody who actually does this stuff frequently knows, there's always another way to upgrade your gadget setup, and you will never ever reach the bottom of the electronics gadgets catalog. I'm still fascinated by some of the things that we have out here, but hey, we've got studio quality stuff set up in here now. We might never stop recording things.
And it's getting better and better. Eventually, I don't know, why aren't the cameras built into things better? I've seen one built-in device that was awesome. I was on a Zoom call with somebody and I said, man, that's a super, super sharp camera. And she said, oh, this is my iPad. I'm like, wow.
See, the iPad does have a very high quality front-facing camera. That's actually much better than the Macintosh. The reason that the specs are so low is deliberately because that front-facing camera is only intended for selfie-type purposes. I wager that we will see some specification upgrades. However, I did see an absolutely fascinating hack workaround that you can do on this. Apparently, the camera on your Peloton bike, if you have one, I don't. If you have one, the camera is apparently very, very nice. And that screen that's built into your Peloton, it's actually just an Android tablet. So you can get into the administrator module of that thing and add other things and upload Zoom to it and do a Zoom call from your Peloton. And it actually has much better video quality than everybody's laptop.
This is what happens when we're all trapped at home.
Don't tell me what it was intended for. Tell me what it's capable of.
Right? Exactly.
That's a so true totally engineer's true. Mindset.
We might be nerds. Anyway, so welcome to episode 55. Do we need an update or everybody's at home?
Everyone's in the same spot.
Well, we are at home, but I will say yesterday we did social distancing on the way west coast of Washington State. We did see that it is legal and authorized for leisure Sunday drives, even though yesterday was not a leisure Sunday. It was actually a good day to go out and drive to the coast and put my toes in the ocean. So I am very psychologically recharged, as it were.
Oh, good for you. That is healthy to do as long as you keep away from other people.
Million miles from other individuals.
I ordered the new fashion item of the times, my own set of masks. I now have retro video gaming masks.
Oh, I saw those.
That are on my Facebook page. So
very nice. Cool. It needs music, like those greeting cards where you push the button and it plays the music. You need the Pac-Man theme.
That would be pretty funny.
Although I did also notice, you know, with all the guidance of everybody, how to make your own mask at home, fold the fabric this way, that way, whatever. People are getting, you know, naturally as they will, taking their own private spin to up-level the technology. People putting paper towels in the middle, people putting other fabric filters of a finer grade in the middle. And I can predict that even without built-in sound effects, we're going to start noticing a whole lot of Darth Vader breathing in the world. Because mm-hmm. when everybody puts those 80-layer made-at-home masks, the that's about the best you can get through those 80 layers of fabric.
Very cool. Well, let's do a show.
Let's do a show.
All right, Dave, you want to kick us off because you've got
sure.
specific approach.
Yeah. So, I mean, we'll include this particular link to it because, I mean, the headline is Coronavirus Massive Surge in Tech Purchases, according to some research. There's lots of versions of this out there. Everyone's saying about talking about the spike in work from home stuff. And I thought it would be healthy to have a bit of a conversation saying like, okay, you know, here we are, and time of recording, you know, we're still early April. coming up on mid-April. This all started for many people within the past 30 days. If you want to put it in perspective, we're still only sort of 30 days into it. There's this discussion of, hey, there's been a burst, there's been a surge, there's been there's difficulty in finding webcams right now. There is a surge on, you know, unified communication. I think I want to talk a little bit here and say, like, let's have a conversation about what this initial reaction is and our first perspectives on it.
Well, it's funny because I don't think there's anybody who thinks that this is long-term.
I hope not.
when your first chore is to help all of your clients get set up at home, that's a burst that you expect to fade immediately. I don't know that it's faded yet for everybody, but Dave and I were on a call earlier today, and there were people saying, you know, it's sort of, you know, settling down. But I hope people think, okay, now I need to have a longer term plan, because setting up everybody at home can only last so long.
Well, that is a temporary spike. You know, in fact, if you follow the article, the folks at give a shout out to our friends at CRN, where that article comes from, they actually believe that the impact on tech upgrades will be a multi-quarter phenomenon. Many quarters is the way that they described it in the article. And what I would say is there will be bright spots in the economy even during the midst of the downturn, because in order to continue doing business at all, there are some things that need to happen. It's just that that spike is going to have a cycle that it will work through in the technology industry. Today, you are a very fortunate individual if you can find stock on hand in a warehouse for laptops, Chromebooks, et cetera. There are some out there. They're being protected as inventory for certain high priority clients. But if you can find them, you're a genius. 2 months from now, I don't believe we will still be on allocation. 1 month from now, we absolutely probably still will be. But 2 months from now, I think we're going to start to see a shift. Right. I was forwarding around to the group here an article on the uptake in interest around VDI and hyperconverged technologies. If I'm a business and I am sending everybody home to work remotely, I could do that just by saying log in on your home PC. I could send you with a work device and a VPN, I hope. Or I could send you home with a thin client or a dumb terminal, and we could dial in on the VDI architecture. That's radically more secure because it's a central core network aspect, and we can get much better security. Now, I get that that also comes with lag and user experience items, but once we get through the short-term impact on laptops, we will move to server upgrade. We will move to network upgrade. I think that there's been a ton of infrastructure upgrades not on the front burner in the last few years that will come to the front burner within this calendar year. I don't think it's going to last forever, but I do think technology is going to be a very bright spot in the economy.
Well, the bit that I want to caution is first off, I am calling this a sugar high because I want everyone to observe the, like, you know, this is unexpected spend by many of these businesses that are pivoting to, you know, on an emergency basis. That's a boost, and do not think I am saying don't take advantage of it. What I'm saying is serve your customers. Like, that's important. Serve your customers, deliver on those needs, but don't mistake that for their willingness to spend or a long term thinking of willingness. Ryan, I'll challenge that. Like, are we looking at server upgrades? If people are conserving cash, which is the smart move to endure a recession / depression, if you're conserving cash, you're going to be making critical decisions about what you can put off and what you cannot absolutely to stay operational. Things will delay. There will be, during the disruption, there will be as much pushback and delay as possible. And even as things swing back around, people are going to likely be conservative on their spends in order to say, is this absolutely necessary? And is it my top priority in terms of delivering or not?
I would say put a pin in that because I have a comment on that for topic number three.
Okay.
But you know, I do think what we are going to see is waves because, you know, anytime we throw a massive group into a completely new environment, certain things are going to come out of it. So we've got all these people who are suddenly working at home, trying to figure out how to get connected to their technology, whether it's at the office or in the cloud. You've helped them all with that. And then the next wave is all these people are looking around and saying, well, I'm not sure everybody needs to see my junky living room or my dog walking back and forth in the background. So they start investing in more things, not really investing, you know, they go on Amazon and they spend $60, right? But they're fine tuning that environment. And I think you got to figure out what's the wave that they're going to then turn to their IT consultant and say, hey, I need help with this because I'm not getting the bandwidth I need. I'm not getting the resolution I need. I'm not getting the performance I need from this environment.
And right. That's oh, sure.
Where you need to come to them with solutions and not just say, hey, whatever you need, I'm here for you.
Well, and that's the thing, right? It's not just sustaining innovations that allow us to do the work we already do a little bit more effectively. It is, let's change the way we do our work as an end user organization. Don't just give me the next server upgrade so that I get a heightened degree of efficiency and performance. Re-architect my business processes so that I can do them remotely, et cetera. I agree there will be caution, right? There will be delay, there will be downturn, but I think that you're going to see, you're not going to see 100% decline in spending in any of these categories.
No.
If it's sure. terrible, you're going to see 70% decline. But that's, you're going to see 30% decline.
Right.
But that still means 70% of the money is getting spent. And that's not a question of they won't buy a server. It's a question of, can you show them how that server is the top priority based on the changes they need to make to their business? But that goes right back to Carl's point. If you can't tell them how to improve the business process, why would they ever buy the technology?
Right. Which then, so this cleanly leads us into the second thing we wanted to talk about, because it's been top of mind, and I know I've commented on it, and I think a discussion is probably healthy on this, is let's start with the, should you lower your rates in response to economic downturn?
No.
It's funny.
No, exactly. We can all quickly agree no.
Topic three.
We're done. Topic
shortest three. Debate ever on our podcast.
This morning, I have answered three emails from people on this. One saying, one asked me, should I cut my rates? Another one saying that they were just on this other call and they're glad that they got the confidence from other people that this is not a time to raise the rates. And the third one asked me to lower my rates in my community. And I'm like, oh, well, here's the deal. I don't think you should ever lower the rate on the most important thing you sell. And if the most important thing you sell is your managed services or your labor, that needs to stay where it is. And you need to make sure that your clients are getting value for what you charge. I mean, at the end of the day, if your job is to help your clients make it through this, technology is their best friend, and you are the one who needs to do most of the guiding, and that's worth paying for.
I mean, and again, we pose the question intentionally for all of us to go no, because the answer is no. Don't lower your rates. Now, I want to point out a subtlety to what we're saying. Like, you absolutely are not lowering your rate. Now, if you need to create new bundles or create new different kinds of services or create a service level offering which is lower in value than your previous one, that may be a tactic to move to. You know, if a customer calls me and says, you know, hey, we can't afford to spend, you know, your normal rate, you know, we can't afford our normal engagement. Okay, well, then what are we decreasing your consumption of in order to find where the new price point is? That is a very reasonable conversation to have. I want to sort of rebel and shake my fist angrily at the cloud. Look, if you're getting advice from someone to lower your rates, just lower your rates, run. Like, go run from that person and go find someone else to listen to, because that person is flat out wrong and they're not getting it. Now, if they're having a conversation of, let's talk about new offerings, let's talk about a new, you know, new way of approaching your customers, I think that's all entirely appropriate. And I'm not saying I don't want to have an interactive conversation with my customer to find what their needs are and how I can serve them. But what I'm saying is my core bit does not change its cost.
See, and this is the thing, right? We have to admit that every business model has two sides to it. There's a dual edge to every sword. The bonus of the cloud and managed services contract business model is that it scales as it goes. If demand spikes, I can spike my capacity to meet that and then go back down when I get out of the spike so that I don't have to buy a server that then just sits dark in my data center. That was kind of the reason why we went to hosted cloud architecture to begin with. Well, that scale up comes with a corresponding scale down at the other side of the spike. That is also true on the downside. Right? The customer lives in a business model with you, whether it's per user or per device, that as they reduce their headcount, their cost to you will correspondingly reduce. I think that that is as customer-centric and friendly as we can be and as we need to be. But Dave, I agree with your point 100%. If you need to pay less, then by definition, you need to get less. Because if you discount the core cost of the same activity or asset, A, that's never going to be recovered in the future. Customers have memories and they're going to remember what it costs to do the things that you do, but it's also not going to give them the kind of corresponding benefit that you think it will, right? Before we got started with the recording, we were doing the math exercise, right? Think about this in terms of the real impact on your customer and on you. If you are, let's be generous, you're a managed service provider, you have 50 customer accounts, and your average MRR from each account is $2,000. I'm being generous, that's not what the average is in the industry, but let's say that that's what your situation is. Let's say you go in there and be aggressive and say, Mr. Customer, I want to give you a 40% decline in our costs for the next several months until we can all get through this together. Thank you very much, Mr. MSP. What you just gave me as your customer is a discount of about $800. And then what you just did was reduce your MRR 50 times 800. That's about $40,000 a month. Now, will that $800 a month keep your customer from going out of business? No, it will not.
No, it will not.
Will that $40,000 put you in jeopardy of going out of business yourself? Yeah, it absolutely will.
And by the way, that's important because and I want to double click and let you keep going. That is look, you cannot help your customers if you go out of business.
Right.
You're trying to do right by your customers. You're trying to help your customers. But if you go out of business by helping them, you're not helping them. So Ryan, keep going.
That's 1,000% accurate. Now, again, this is not just a timely topic. This is something that for 20 plus years has been, I refer to it as my Johnny Appleseed quest around the channel and around the technology industry, traveling around the world, planting seeds of selling on value as opposed to competing on discount. Now, I believe that's a fundamental problem that we have across the board. As technology professionals, we knee-jerk to the discount competitive position far more frequently and far sooner than we need to. I understand that's a universal challenge. In this heightened period of pressure, this is not a time where it is more important for you to give a discount. This is the time where it is more important for you not to give a discount, because you will go under faster than your customers will. And then they are left high and dry without the benefit of the services that you provide.
And I think at the end of the day, you have to remember, nobody saves much by cutting their spend for IT consulting. Very few IT consultants here have clients who pay them $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 a month, right? A client. Maybe they have a handful that will pay them over $2,500 or $3,500 a month, but if your clients are in trouble, they need to cut their staff. And you cutting out a $1,000 or a $2,000 RMM is never going to touch that. So you need to help them. And the, you know, the interesting thing is we need to be braver about this simply because we are far more necessary than we were in the last recession.
Yep.
You know, right now today, if somebody says, I need you to cut out your services, you're like, okay, should we cut out your internet connectivity? Should we cut out your telephones? Should we cut out your DNS, your filtering, your antivirus, your, you know, spam filtering? Do you want to cut out your email? Right. What do you want to cut? At the end of the day, the easiest thing, if somebody asks you, is to say, all right, let's go to labor is going to be hourly, but you've got to pay that flat fee for everything else. But again, I wouldn't do it until somebody specifically asks you. And I think as a business advisor, in addition to being a technology advisor, you really need to help your clients make good long-term decisions. Right. And that does not include not protecting your business from technology.
You see, many months ago, before we got anywhere near the current emergency situation, we had a conversation in which we made the observation, be careful what you wish for, because you might actually get it. For a generation, those of us in the technology industry and in the channel, we have been clamoring with our customers to convince them that we are mission critical. We are vital to your business. We're not just peripheral. It's not just nice to have. These are mandatory business capabilities. And we, as the service providers, are mandatory to your business operations. Guess what?
Ta-da!
You are. Welcome to the real world. And our observation a couple of months ago was, you don't get to be mission critical and not have grown-ups pay attention to you. That comes with regulation. That comes with competition. It comes with scrutiny from the customer. And if you start doing things like, I'm going to slash my cost to the bone, your customers are going to look at you and go, so you're not a real business person who intends to be in business. I can't possibly trust you with my mission critical infrastructure. I need somebody that's going to be permanent.
We should adopt the marketing that we are an essential business.
We are. We absolutely yes. are. But I, you know, and I'm going to spend some time on my own stuff on this, but I really do want to counsel everyone, you know, be careful where you're getting advice from and where you're getting direction from, because everyone has an opinion, but they are not all created equal. So, exactly. but that is a whole other topic that I perhaps will dive into. But let's move on to our new current bit, technology and perspective post-pandemic,
right.
The more hopeful side of things. We've given
so
some practical advice.
Yeah, so post-pandemic, the question is, what kind of changes will we see in our cities? I'd say very broadly, like, you know, when you look around, what's different other than the fact that today there might not be as many cars on the road, but is that a long-term thing? What are the long-term things?
So it's interesting because the way I was starting this thought process is the way I think about the design of cities. I think quickly a lot of companies are going to realize that they write a reasonably sized check for a building space that they have proven is not quite as important to their business operations as it was 3 months ago. I point to all of those rents that are currently due on office spaces all over the country and around the world that, while important, are certainly not vital to keeping the business going. And I think I would posit that we're going to see a lot of people looking at the way the value of that space, less around the idea of I'm going to create individual boxes that individual humans sit in to produce work, and more about the value of there's collaboration space that we are all lacking, that social interaction, that ability to work physically together on things. That is vital. But those individual pods that people sit on by themselves, maybe I don't need as many of those. That also systematically starts changing the way people think about all environments. For example, it is, you know, you're finding the need to have restaurants, and we're all valuing the ability to get out and walk and the ability to exercise and do I need to drive as far as I did for all of these resources? There's all kinds of the way that you think about the design of that that's going to have really interesting impacts long term.
See, again, to borrow a very smart phrase from a very smart person, change happens very slowly until it comes on all at once. That is what we are observing now. 15 years ago, I read an article through a consortium of urban planners. I find urban planning and design to be a fascinating topic and the implications of technology and smart cities, et cetera, right? I've been following this for many years. 15 years ago, there was an article written by a number of the big thinkers who got together and said, we believe that society is on the edge of being ready for another radical redesign to the architecture of our interaction, of society in general, right? There once was a time where we all lived in small towns, and then we gathered in cities, and then those cities became a core with a whole bunch of suburbs, and then there was an architectural twist. Everybody knows the belt route that goes around your metro area, where instead of everybody coming to the center of the city, you could have business parks around the outside, and people could do their work without traveling to the inside. Had a lot of unintended consequences on hollowing out the urban core of metropolitan areas. But what they posited was, with technology and with the remote access that we now have, there's a reason to believe that it's not just logistics, it's not just rent cost, it's human interaction that will be redesigned. I think you're right on target, Dave. I think we're going in that direction. It's been coming along for a while, and now this shock will cause us to accelerate to a point where there is nowhere near enough parking downtown in the city cores in any major metropolitan area, anywhere in the US, anywhere in Europe, anywhere in Asia. There is not enough parking downtown. Rather than building more parking, let's do more remote working. There are not nearly enough lanes on the freeway. Instead of building more lanes on freeway and eminent domaining people's property, how about we do more remote work? I think that people are ready for it. I think that the technology is getting ready for it. But as we've been discussing, I fear that the micromanagers in our companies and organizations are not yet ready for it. And so there's going to be a tug of war here in the next year.
I think, so let me go back to the pin I put into okay. this conversation. So I'm reminded of the last recession. And one of my favorite stories was this client, Debbie, who called up my brother and said, you know, we do marketing for new home developments and there are no new home developments. There's no money for marketing. You know, all that whole thing had collapsed. And she said, we need you to help us save money. My brother did not hear, we need you to cut your rates. What he heard is, we need you to help us save money. And he said, oh, that's easy. I need you to shut down your office. I need you to we'll replace your phone system with voice over IP, send all of your employees home. We'll set them up with remote workstations, right? Debbie, not only did she do that, but she took the opportunity a few months after that to move across country. So her 5 employees are still in the Bay Area, working from home with all the technology they need. She's in Connecticut. And so now, 10 years later, she has never reopened that office. And I think we're going to see that times 100 as a result of what we're doing now. And so part of what happens, like Dave was talking about, you know, restructuring the space, there's a lot of people that still need the personal connection. They need a place to go. They need a place to gather. But we've also, as Ryan said, you know, all this stuff has been growing. This technology has been emerging for 10 years. We now have flexible workspaces. You can rent time for your employees 5 at a time to go someplace, have their meetings, make that their office if they need one. But the whole concept that every single business out there needs to rent a space and buy cubicles and buy furniture, those days are gone.
Yeah, and what I'm finding is this consistent theme with all of these explorations, and I'm going to keep bringing it up because I think it's the way people should be looking at what these predictions mean is this process, what we're going through in the transfer is an accelerant, not causing massive change. It is accelerating trends that were already happening. We're not seeing necessarily, we're predicting that it's going to be this massive difference. What it is this trend was already happening. You see it in urban design. You see it in the conversion, the way people are building and thinking about office. Now it's just going to go faster because we have reason to. That's a good lens.
We have some new forces. You mentioned restaurants. I think a lot of restaurants are not going to need to open their inside space again. They will have learned how to make so much money with delivery and takeout that they may not open up that interior space. Now, bars obviously will open up their interior space, but at the same time, we have delivery services are all changing. They're emerging as we are going along. Amazon just recently announced that they're going to back off temporarily from competing head-to-head with FedEx and UPS.
Right.
Well, believe me, they will be back. And in the meantime, they're doing what they always do, which is learning from every single dollar that gets spent how to do this better. So I think a lot of things are going to change in terms of what we expect from delivery services, what we think can be delivered, what we do with restaurants, what we do with meeting spaces. It will be a new world, even though a lot of people are still going to go back to their offices and sit in their cubicles.
Well, see, and again, this is where I come back to, we said a few weeks ago on the podcast, things that will survive afterwards. And all of us agreed that now that the cover's been taken off and we've proven that most of these business processes can work just fine remotely, that people aren't going to give that up. They're going to recognize the lifestyle benefit, the lack of commute requirements. They're going to see under the covers and go, wow, I could do this remotely. That makes me want to continue to do it. That does not guarantee that your middle manager who watches over your shoulder to measure every little minute detail of what you do every day, that person is suddenly going to have a change of heart and go, no, I don't need to monitor what people do. I'm fine letting them be self-directed and self-managed. Now, I'm being sarcastic a little bit on purpose here because I believe there's a business case that will justify much of that shift, but I believe that human nature is a very sticky phenomenon. People are who they are, and there are already examples of, for every solution provider I know who just reported their best month of sales ever and did it 100% remote, no employees in the office. They took everybody and sent them home, had their best month ever. For every one of those that I know, I also know another one that says, yeah, but how can I be sure if those employees are actually working or not just watching TV? Now, that's not a question of technology. That's a question of trust. And my baseline business advice is, we need to learn to trust more and other people need to work more professionally. But if you don't trust the people who come to your business every day to do their jobs without you standing within a 6-foot personal bubble of them, why did you hire them to begin with?
If what you're asking them to do is not measurable enough for you to look and say, did you fix the website? Did you get the orders processed? Did you do the shipping right? You need to reorganize how you measure what.
Yeah, measure them by their output, not by their busyness. I don't care how busy people are. I care, did they produce the result and the value that was needed? That's a 30-minute topic on its own, and folks need to stop
I think this is distinctly the portion where we say, like, you know, hey, we do want to hear what you're not only what you're hearing on the ground, but also areas you want us to be thinking about. You know, the city's discussion was started from an office space and the with the lens of opportunity. You know, listeners, please reach out and let us know if you think we're crazy, if you think we're on the right track, or if there's areas you want us to be debating or thinking about. We are certainly trying to spend a bunch of our time digging into what we're seeing, looking at historical data and comparing against previous trends. And obviously there's a lot of unprecedented nature to what we're talking about, but that doesn't mean we don't have things that we can use to model this out.
And I would love to hear from people about what you're seeing as opportunities that you did not anticipate, that all of a sudden people are coming in to you and saying, hey, can you do this? Can you do that?
Oh, very much so. I want to hear from the ground. What are people seeing right now? That's going to be a big, big deal.
Very cool. All right. I think that will do it for today. Thank you all. This has been episode 55 of the Killing It Podcast.
Thanks for tuning in to the Killing It Podcast. Please share with your friends and tell everyone to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and all the podcast places. Join us next week and help us keep killing it in the technology business.